despite that reality that Chekhov is one of the most one of the writers who had I don't know how many hundreds of books and hundreds and thousands of scholars, and this is the writer who is in a Russian high school. It means that if someone is in a high school, he's killed. If millions of kids are studying Chekhov, it means that there is no way to say what kind of writer he is. And he's one of the most of the most staged writers in the world, and especially in Russia, of course. And it doesn't give him much, I would say, understanding, because the more I think on Chekhov, the more we are doing Chekhov in the Moscow Art Theater, the more problems we have with him. And actually, it was it's from the beginning. And I would like to start with that. Usually, the relationship, Chekhov's relationship with the Moscow, to the Moscow Art Theater, is a kind of ideal. Great writer who actually created Moscow Art Theater, one of the writers who started the line which you can call such a writer like the author of the theater, not author in the way of playwriting, but author in the way of creating the theater. Because if the Siegel and Uncle Vanya, he wrote not for the Moscow Art Theater, but Three Sisters and the Cherry Orchard, he did. Especially for the Moscow Art, and I would say especially for the actors of the Moscow Art Theater, keeping in mind who will play, you know, the parts. And there starts the problem. Chekhov became the author of the theater, one of the first playwrights in the world who created his own theater, a whole trend in the theater, created the new way of acting, created new understanding what is playwriting about, what is the contemporary drama, the new drama about. But in the same way, I should say immediately that between Chekhov and the Moscow Art Theater, especially in his latest years, it was a lot of conflicts and misunderstandings. They are very important, not because of misunderstanding, but because of the of a real relationship between a playwright and theater. If you would like to be a creator, the author of theater, it's very difficult. It's very difficult because contemporary theater, especially contemporary great directors, they don't want to stage contemporary playwrights. It's difficult because they are sitting there, you know, they are watching what are you doing, and they are ready to make their comments every second that you are doing wrong, and so on and so on. I asked some of the Russians and Americans there, why all of you started with the contemporary playwrights, but ended with Shakespeare, with Chekhov, why are you not doing contemporary plays anymore? The answer usually, you know what, it's difficult. He's sitting there, and everything which is bad, it's me. Everything which is good goes to him. Actually, it's a Chekhov's case, because the last moment of his, I would say, close, tight relationship with the Moscow Art Theater was in the rehearsal of the Cherry Orchard. He was mortally sick, as you probably know. He finished Cherry Orchard with a great difficulty because he was dying. He was a doctor, and he diagnosed, of course, himself, and he knew very well that he is dying. Cherry Orchard is a final product, it's a last will. And he was dreaming that he would come, the Cherry Orchard he finished in Yalta, in Crimea, and he was finishing, and when he was finishing, he was dreaming that he would come back. His wife is there, Olga Knieper, she's an actress of the Moscow Art. He wrote the play, keeping in mind that she should play Madame Ranevskaya, and he sent her the manuscript before Moscow Art Theater got it. And Olga Knieper, she was in a bed when the mail came with the manuscript of the play, and she read it in a bed in the morning. She crossed herself three times before she started reading, because everyone was expecting. Everyone understood that he is dying, and this is the last piece. And some of the people in the Moscow Art Theater was afraid that Chekhov has not power to write really new play. And Nemirovich Danchenko, who was co-founder and actually co-director of all of his plays in the Moscow Art, he insulted him when he sent him a letter asking where is the play would be ready and so on and so on, and trying to speed up the process of finishing the play, said something like that. Don't worry if the play would be not, you know, just you, like brand new, if you will repeat some of your beautiful old motifs, it would be good. You know, for a writer, if someone don't worry about if the play would not be, you know, absolutely. He was insulted, and he kept in secret the plot of a play. He was upset that when one of the journalists was trying to explain the plot of the play in the paper and messed up everything. And he sent the play to Olga Knipper. If you will read the answer of Olga to the play, the first, I would say, response to the play, it's clear that she did not get. She did not understand. And this is the response of the Moscow Art Theater to many of these plays. The Three Sisters, the first response was, what is that? Is it a play? It's the first response of Stanislavski to The Seagull when he read it. Because Nemirovich was the pioneer of bringing Chekhov to the Moscow Art and to start new company with that new drama. And Stanislavski, when he read the Seagull, he didn't want to stage it. He didn't want to direct it. It's not a play. Just words, words, like Nina Zarechna in a play about Konstantin Trepov. It's just words, words, and words. It's no play. The same was with Cherry Orchard. Olga Knipper, yes, she praised that the play is great, and so on, but you know, you can feel that she's overwhelmed, she's very nervous, and she actually did not understand what is the play about, what is the, because it's a private plot, it's not about great things, it's again about something very miserable, and at the same time very symbolic, but where it goes, in what direction, it's not clear for her. And the same response from the Moscow Art Theater when they did have the first reading, and Stanislavski sent a telegram, actually, made the whole account of all of the acts of the play, step by step. After the first act, I feel that, after the second that, after the last act, I was crying as a child, like a child. Actually, it's the best praise ever done, you know, if someone is crying after the play, what is better, you know? But not for Chekhov. The answer was, why he was crying? I wrote a comedy, even farce. He did not understand the play. He probably did not read my play attentively. It's the beginning of the relationship of the last, one of the most important play of the Russian drama, of the 20th century drama. He did not read my play. I wrote comedy, even farce. You wrote in your small piece of what I just got from Anand about the Three Sisters. He did not call Three Sisters a comedy. It's a drama. It's the only thing he called drama. But he did call the Cherry Orchard as a comedy as well as the Seagull. Stanislavski did not understand it, and they started from the beginning, kind of a conflict. When finally Chekhov came to Moscow, they did not allow him to come to Moscow because he was suffering from the consumption, tuberculosis, and that time doctors, they had a vision of those incurable disease that he could come to Moscow, return to Moscow where the snow would be there, not before. And he came when the snow came. And he started visiting Moscow Art Theater every day, every rehearsal, sitting in the darkness like you there, and Stanislavski behind the table, with a cigarette. Russians allow until now to direct it because he is a superpower, to smoke and to do everything because he is a god now, and he is smoking. They don't allow him to drink vodka, but to smoke, yes, please, you can do it. Stanislavski was there, and in a typical Stanislavskian way of a rehearsal, you know, I don't believe, again, again, time and again, again. And Chekhov lost his temper finally, because, you know, any playwright, he understands what he wrote. And actually, the best way, just deliver my lines. What's the problem? I wrote everything. And when he lost his temper, he whispered in Stanislavski's ear, you are wrong. You should do that and that. That's it. Stanislavski did not pay any attention. He was in a mood of creativity. He is a director, means co-author. It's not, you know, a guy who is just interpreting your words. He's the director who started that super profession of the 20th century theater, and he did not feel himself as a just subordinate who is just asked to interpret what Stanislavski, what Chekhov did. He did not pay any attention. In 10 minutes, Chekhov left the house and never came back. That's the end of the real relationship. they sent a delegation this day to ask excuse and, you know, pardon. Never forgive. This is the model of the relationship of a real playwright and real director. And then, until the rest of his life, he had another 5 months after the opening night, which was in January of 1904. I would like to remind you that he died in July of the same year, so a few months of life. And when in there, they actually celebrated his name day in January during the intermission of the opening night, and they asked him to come on the event stage to celebrate it, to make some speeches. And he was there, and everyone in the audience didn't understand that guy is dying, because he looked like a dying man, skinny like a child, and someone could not even look stand his looks. And someone asked from the audience, "Please take a seat." And he didn't understand what is going on very well, and he did not accept the show, the performance of the Moscow Orpheum, until the end of his life. Did discuss it. He did not read my play. He ruined my play, Alexei. It's funny that when he wanted to insult Stanislavski, he called him Alexei. This is his real last name. Stanislavski is a stage name, and Alexei is a merchant son. If he would like to say that he did something bad, it's Alexei. If something good, it's Stanislavski. Very different personas, very different people. As soon as he gets, you know, a letter that someone was in the Moscow Art Theater, so the Cherry Orchard, and the show is great, the performance is great, but the last act they did play a little bit too much, I mean, dragging out, you know, the last act. Ah, that's right. Immediately a letter to Olga. I told you that he did not read my play. He ruined my play. Why they are playing more than an hour the last act? It's in the last act, it's clear that the train is in the 45 minutes. One of the characters says the train isn't 45, they would be late for the train. and again, discussion, and Stanislavski would answer that, look at your play, look at your stage directions. She's crying, he's crying. Nobody's crying in my play. There is a stage direction through tears, but through tears doesn't mean that she's crying. You know. And an actress, if any actress in the world has a stage direction, I am crying or through the tears, it takes time to play. And every actress in the world would like to play, you know, through the tears, you know, slow, not, you know, in a great speed. Final Stanislavski's answer to Chekhov was that we are very different. You are genius, and because of that, you feel your play as a comedy, as a farce. I am a very plain guy, and I feel that this is the tragedy. If I would ask you who is right, who is wrong, there is no answer. Chekhov right, and Stanislavski was right. Hundreds of attempts in the 20th century theater, including Moscow, to stage Cherry Orchard as a farce, as a comedy, nobody succeeded. Another question, what does it mean, farce and comedy? In what way, farce and comedy? In a way of divine comedy or human comedy, Balzac or, you know, Dante. It's a kind of a play written from the point of view of vanishing life, exaggerating life. He looks at everything there from another point of view. Stanislavski is in, within the life. He's out. And he looks at that plot and says, no, it's a comic, it's a farce. Ten years ago, we had the German theater in Moscow, a great German director, one of the great European directors, Peter Stein, who brought his Cherry Orchard to the Moscow Art Theater. Every other year, we have an international Chekhov's festival in Moscow, and they are bringing, you know, from all over the world things. And Peter Stein brought his Cherry Orchard. And the performance of Stein was just to follow all of the Chekhov's stage directions. If you would follow it, it would be very avant-garde, you know, show if you follow literally his stage directions in the Cherry Orchard. Because, you know, the art of theater is very conventional. Look, in the first act of the Cherry Orchard, when the plot, when the action starts, what time? In the early, early morning. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. They are waiting when the masters are coming. Is it important that this is 2 o'clock in the morning? Very important. Because the first act ends when it's the sunrise. So the whole first act is between dark in the morning, in the middle of night, and a sunrise. Nobody played. Because to play the sunrise on stage, it takes a couple of minutes. A couple of minutes is a semi-darkness or darkness. In a couple of minutes is light, like now. And it's okay, because we are in a theater. We don't need an hour of sunrise. Peter Stein, who was a German, you know, obstinacy and he did the whole first act is about sunrise. With all of the lighting tricks, you know, you feel first 15 minutes just in the full darkness. And people are there on stage like in the aquarium, you know, and you cannot see the faces of the actors. 5 minutes, Moscovites were quite friendly. In 5 minutes, they laughed. What is going on? I couldn't see, you know, what is going on stage. It's the first act. The second act, by the way, if you would follow Chekhov's, Chekhovian stage directions, the second act takes out of the house, out of house, in the field, just before the sunset. And the end of the second act is that line. By the way, combined with another 2 lines, which is typical Chekhovian way of construction, the dialogue, the 3 lines at the end of the second act of the Cherry Orchard. I would like to remind you that all second acts in Chekhov's plays, in all plays, are the most difficult because in the second act, actually nothing happens at all. This is Chekhovian world of boredom, of poetical boredom, of the boredom of life, actually, which is Chekhovian feeling of life as it is. So nothing happens. People are talking about nothing. The miserable people are talking about. And at the end of the second act, Yepikhodov, who is a miserable cleric, he's coming to join the nothing to do in Stanislavski's definition. First line, Raneskaya. Yepikhodov is coming. He sees him there. You know, if nothing happens, when even Yepikhodov is coming, it's a kind of an event, you know? Yepikhodov is coming. Okay, then, in a play where every word is count because this is the last play. Next line is of Anya, daughter of Raneskaya. She repeats like echo. Yepikhodov is coming. Second time. In the play, why twice, you know, to mark, to underline that event which does not exist, Yepikhodov is coming. Then the third line of the brother of Madame Raneskaya, Mr. Guy. Look, the sun has set, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chekhovian. Jump, you know, in universe immediately from Yepikhodov is coming, from the nonentity. The second act of the German performance of the Peter Stein was completely dedicated to the sunset. All of the lighting stuff, all of the power of a director, and they did play what does it mean sunset on stage, an hour. After their show, I had an interview with Peter for the Russian television, and I did ask him, do you mean that the sunrise and sunset, the main event of the first 2 acts of the Cherry Orchard? He said, definitely. It's about contemporary, the state of the Cherry. Why it's definitely sunrise and sunset is the most important event. He said, look, that's why coming, he said. That's why Fars. He looks, you know, from that point of view of sunset and sunrise, of what is going on in the human life. Who are the characters of the Cherry Orchard? What they are doing? They are like tourists.
We are like, all of us are too. We are coming for a while and we will disappear in a while. But the sunrise and sunset are part of eternity, of immortality. And this is the whole point. The frame of the play is about immortality. What does it mean? For Chekhov, who was not a believer, which is very important, his faith was ruined by his father.
Interesting that, coming back to the beginning of the century, that Stanislavski, of course, did not feel that the play, that the Cherryorchid, is a kind of a far cast into the future. Nobody felt it. Who could imagine that? That we don't have that power for far cast. In 3 weeks after the opening of the Cherryorchid, the Russian-Japanese war started. In 3 weeks. In few months, the first Russian revolution happened. Is it a part of the Cherryorchid? Now it's a part of the Cherryorchid. That's the point. In 1904, in January, it was not a part of the Cherryorchid. It's about, you know, Russian people who are, it's a kind of a real estate issue. Should you sell it or should you not, or not? But it's not a real estate issue. It's an issue of the changing of time, changing of era, of the epoch. Did they understand it? No. Only through playing that, you know, many years, Stanislavski did play Gaev. Actually, Chekhov did not cast him as Gaev. He wanted him to play Lopakhin, the merchant, the guy who came with an axe, and actually at the end of the play, cut down the trees. He wanted him to play it and said that this is the most complicated, most interesting character. I wrote it for you. You should play. And he actually put a list of the characters, the casting, in a play when he sent it to the Moscow Theater. Stanislavski didn't want to play and didn't play. And told Chekhov that I don't want to play Lopakhin because I don't want to play dressed up Konstantin Sergeyevich. It means that Chekhov saw him as a Lopakhin. What is the real understanding of Stanislavski? If you would look at Stanislavski through Chekhov's eyes, now it was translated from English. You know that book, Donald Rayfield's book about Chekhov, Chekhov's life. You know that book? English book. Which is a kind of revolution. Because that guy, I know him, he came in the 90s to Russia when the Russian archives were opened. For the foreigners, and all of the state secrets, and Chekhov belongs to the state secret. Because Russians are guarding the reputation of the Russian classics. It's a kind of a liberal censorship. They guarded, they did not give you any materials which would, you know, disgrace or compromise, you know, somehow Chekhov. He collected everything, put them, you know, in a book, and this is like that, a book about Chekhov's life, with all of the things, ellipses, which the Russians never would give to the Russian audience because we were afraid that it would be, you know, this grave Chekhov. He gave. And in one of a letter, Chekhov says about this, he's very boring and dull. I would like to inject a sperm into him. Chekhov's remark about Stanislavski. I don't know what kind of things Stanislavski wanted to inject into Chekhov, but anyway, it's a kind of, not misunderstanding, but different point of view, different feeling of life. Stanislavski in 1904, he's not a dying man. He's in a full, you know, health and greatness. Look then what happened. They did play the Cherryorchid together with Olga Knieper. It was one of her favorite parts, finally. Until the revolution, through the First World War and the revolution and first few years of the Civil War, finally Olga Knieper, with a group of the Moscow Art Theater actors, in 1919, they went to Ukraine in the middle of the Civil War, in the summer, in June, just to get some food and to get some rest from what was going on in Moscow. It's a catastrophe, collapse of the country. They went to Kharkov and opened on tour the best Moscow Art Theater players, and in Kharkov they did open with the Cherryorchid, of course, because it became an emblem with the Cherryorchid.
in a country where all of the cherry orchards were, you know, cut down. It became, you know, the play became a metaphor of what was going to, what going to happen with the country.
And they opened with the cherry orchard in Kharkov in June of 1919 under one political regime. They ended the performance, the show, when the political regime was changed because the White Army came to Kharkov during the show. And that's it. And then the commander-in-chief, General Anton Denikin, with all of the entourage of him, came to the end of the show because Moscow Art Theater is a symbol of Russia, with bouquets of flowers. And they did have a beautiful talk to the actors, and he said, don't come back to Moscow. First, I will be in Kremlin in 2 weeks, and then you will come. What happened? Those great actors, including Olga Knieper, they decided to serve the White Army and to stay with them. You understand what does it mean in a situation of a civil war? Stanislavski is there, and the best actors are serving the White Army. Finally, of course, General Denikin did not come to Kremlin. Died in the States. Last year, we brought back to Russia his ashes. In 100 years, you know. And finally, in 1920, Olga Knieper and all of those Moscow Art Theater great actors, they left Russia for 3 years. For good, actually. They did come back, but some of them didn't. And Olga Knieper, leaving Russia from Georgia, decided to write a short note to Stanislavski to explain that they are leaving. Actually, it's a death of the Moscow Art Theater if 10 great actors, including Olga Knieper, Chekhov, they are leaving. What is the life of the Moscow Art Theater, of the leftovers in Moscow? And that letter, which we published recently, is beautiful because she did not have time to write a really long letter. Actually, she was not able to write that with that kind of letter in 1920. What kind of mail system? What kind of post system? Just a small note, short note. And in that note, she is using the cherry orchard, the quote from the cherry orchard, as a kind of explanation of what happened. Because he knows the play and she knows the play, and they are so many years within the play, with the developing plot, the developing story of the country and of the play together in parallel. The paragraph starts, I am leaving Russia because, then the quote from the cherry orchard, life in this house is over. You understand? Stanislavski did not feel it in 1904. The life of that house was, for that time, endless. Beautiful. Russia is, in the beginning of the century, one of the most flourishing countries in the world. So powerful, with a great art and great artists in all fields of art, in painting, in poetry, in the silver age of the Russian culture. Moscow Art Theater is a child of that. Who could imagine that in a few months it would have that bloody end of the first Russian Revolution, then the World War I, and then the Civil War and the revolution of the Bolsheviks. So, I'm about how it started, that kind of tense, that kind of relationship between Moscow Art Theater and Chekhov, when his plays, especially Three Sisters and the Cherry Orchard, became accumulating the meaning of the passing time, which is actually the phenomenon of growing meaning of the classic, of the classical text, when it gets, you know, every time new and new information and gives it to you. The point is that Moscow Art Theater is a house of Chekhov. And you know, when they did celebrate Chekhov's name day in January of 1904, when they celebrated his birthday, Nemirovich was a friend of Chekhov and actually brought him to Chekhov and was insisting on the sigil. He had a speech, a beautiful speech. You know, but it's a birthday. And he said, among many other things, Anton, you should know, this is your house forever, Moscow Art Theater. Which is, you know, birthday, why I would like to say something good. This is your house forever. But in reality, it was a great struggle for the house, for the Chekhov's house. And the direction of the Moscow Art Theater changed so many times during the century. I'm 27 years with the Moscow Art Theater. So I came in the Soviet time, and I could be a witness of all of them, or many of them, great changes. Until the revolution, Cheryochik and Three Sisters and everything of Chekhov is the most important part of the repertoire. After the revolution, in the 20s, when Moscow Art Theater came back from the States, they spent 2 years in the States, Stanislavski and the company. Chekhov was not allowed. You should know that. In the 20s, the real post-revolutionary decade, not under Stalin, Stalin did allow Chekhov. Killed him, but allowed him to play, killed spiritually. In the 20s, they did not allow Chekhov. First time Stanislavski did play Three Sisters again, only in the gala, or in the during the celebration, the jubilee of the Moscow Art Theater, 30 years, in October of 1928. Because they got together some most important pieces from different, most famous productions of the Moscow Art Theater. Hamlet, Three Sisters, and a few others. And Stanislavski did play Vershiny for the first time after the Civil War and Revolution. The first act, one act. Could not button, you know, the uniform because he got pounds. He was 65. His favorite part, handsome man, 2 meters, he's, you know, height like, you know. Why did not they allow the Three Sisters? Because of the uniform of the Russian officers. They killed all of those people like, you know, Russian officers during the Civil War. How could they see them on stage again? And even in the play, as you are doing the play, who are the officers in the Russian deep province? The best people of the country, Russian officers. Russian military, the best people. Stanislavski had his heart attack on stage playing Vershiny that evening. That's the finale of the Three Sisters in the Moscow in the 20s. He had a heart attack, and then they would revive the Three Sisters, the new version of the Three Sisters, a year before the World War II. Nemirovich Danchenko, after Stanislavski's death, in a couple of years, he did the new version of the Three Sisters. But again, there is no ideal, you know, in the relationship with the new society, with the Soviet reality. Nemirovich is a friend of Chekhov, and he had incredible respect to the play, to the text of the play, but he had also great respect to the Soviet reality. You could not play Three Sisters in a way Chekhov wrote it in the Soviet Union. You could not play the Three Sisters, the end of the Three Sisters, the finale of the Three Sisters, in a way which Chekhov did it. I would like to remind you that the play ends with a very contradictory, you know, lines, like the sun has set, the Nebuchadnezzar is coming, the same at the end of the Three Sisters. Three beautiful women are keeping each other, saying some kind of a poetry. If we only knew, if we only knew. This is the end, probably, great end for the play. But the play ends with Dr. Chebutykin, absurd statement. He's drunk, and the last line of a play, which is a historical play, the most important play of the 20th century, at least for the Russians. The play ends with Chebutykin line, doesn't matter, doesn't matter, and then he sings from an operetta. So that's how the play ends. Nemirovich cut the last line of the play. He could not finish the Three Sisters with Chebutykin's statement about absurdity of the war. Doesn't matter, but in Chekhov's finale, it's a combination of if we only knew, and doesn't matter, tarararabumbia. This is the polyphony. This is the point. Could not play it. Cut the last line of a play in the Moscow Art Theater. Just to let you know how it's difficult to follow the Chekhov's text. We did the last version of the Three Sisters. A few words about those two last versions of the Cheryochik, which you have in the Moscow Art now, and the Three Sisters. The last Three Sisters we did 10 years ago, year before the centennial of the Moscow Art Theater.
And we brought it to the Brooklyn Academy of Music in New York. We played it there. It was the last, actually, performance of the Oleg Efremov, who was running Moscow Art Theater 30 years, and never staged Three Sisters in his life. Because he saw Nemirovich Danchenko, when he was a young actor, a student of the Moscow Art School, he saw the Three Sisters directed by Nemirovich. And he was so impressed with that genius piece of art, he could not, you know, if you're impressed by something, it's difficult for you to start doing it by yourself. Because you have to hate something to start, you know, doing it. Or at least you have to be different. Because if you love something, why you should stage it? If someone did. And finally, he cut something within himself and started doing that Three Sisters, which was completely different from that legendary production, second version of the Three Sisters before the war. What he did, actually, you know, the Three Sisters is a play about living within the, what does it mean living within the time? With a passing time, how to get actually the whole metaphor about human life there. And that's why the four seasons, all of the four seasons and changing seasons and all of that stuff. And as you know, in the design of the Three Sisters, in the stage design, in the scenic design, it's very important that house of the process. It's a problem of metaphysics in a play and reality. The play was real, then finally, through the centuries, it became more and more metaphysical. You know, 10 years ago, I was a kind of advisor, I don't know how to call myself, the part which I played, Goodman Theater in Chicago. They did the Three Sisters, and they asked me to check the new translation done by one of the American playwrights, who doesn't speak Russian and use just literary translation. And they gave me the text. And I started at that time, actually, it was difficult for me to check the translation. I started, you know, making the comparisons between different translations of the Three Sisters. And for the first time, I didn't understand how it's difficult to translate that poetry of life, which is the Chekhov's language. So difficult, probably much more difficult than to translate a poetry. So it was a part, at this part in the second act, again, second act of the Three Sisters, when Vershinin is talking about the Moscow experience, that how difficult it was his life in Moscow. Every day I was, you know, passing to the barracks, to the soldiers over the bridge, and when you looked from the bridge into their dark water, you know, it's a kind of a suicide, you know, stuff. But he ends the monologue. But you have here beautiful, you know, town, healthy Russian life, magnificent river, and so on. It's a typical monologue, Chekhovian monologue of a Chekhovian man, which ends with a line of Olga, the eldest, which is very plain. No, there is cold and mosquitoes. It's difficult to translate, no, it's every graduate student can translate. There is cold and mosquitoes. But American playwright who did not speak Russian, he started thinking about the meaning of the line, and he did understand that the line is not correct. Olga is not correct. Chekhov is not correct. He made a mistake, because actually everybody knows from his or her personal experience that if it's cold, there is no mosquitoes. If it's warm, there is mosquitoes, but if it's cold, there is no mosquitoes. And he a little bit corrected Chekhov, added a couple of words. And it became an American version in Chicago. No, says Olga, there is cold in the winter and mosquitoes in the summer. Some of you would say, okay, why not? It's clarifying, you know, Russian strange, you know, cold and mosquitoes. He killed Chekhov immediately, because the whole point is it's not about climate. It's not about Russian climate. It's about metaphysics. It's about life, how she feels it. It's cold and mosquitoes forever. The whole point of a play is, you know, in Chekhov's case, you could not explain. That's the pre-Beckettian, I would say, meaning. You could not explain the meaning of the plot. Why those people in Waiting for Godot, what they are waiting for? But everybody knows in the beginning of the 50s, when it was the opening in Paris, it was the reaction was, what is the play? It's an absurd.
Then we are calling that the drama of absurd. But actually, Waiting for Godot is a Chekhovian play. It's a Three Sisters, Chabotykin. And the point is, you could not explain even the main plot of the play. You never, nobody would explain why the Three Sisters don't go to Moscow. What's the problem? They have a they have a father, a general, they have a good pension. If you won't go to Moscow, go to Moscow. It's a problem of Amtrak or train. Buy tickets, go to Moscow. But everybody understands that it's not a problem of tickets. They cannot go to Moscow. Why? Why Raevskaya, why she doesn't sell the cherry orchard? It's so obvious and pragmatically, it's absolutely clear. Mr. Lopatin says, do it immediately, you will get a fortune. What's the answer? To sell cherry orchard, it's so squalid. If you would like to sell the cherry orchard, sell it with me together. What does it mean? You never will explain why Uncle Vanya, who is rebelling against Professor Serebrikov, who is the enemy of him for some period of time. Then finally he did understand, as Chekhov did in all of his plays, there is no enemy for us. All enemies is here. And there is no struggle with against some. There is no point for struggle from some against something else. All of the problems is here. In the middle of play, Uncle Vanya, what he's doing, he's trying to shut down Professor Serebrikov twice. The reaction, the last reaction is, I missed again. In the middle of play is the scene, the shooting scene, which is violation of the structure of the world drama. If you have a shooting scene, do it at the end. If the hero wants to kill himself, do it at the end, at the curtain call. You cannot do it in the middle of a play. If you do the shooting scene in the middle of a play, what you will do the second half of the play? The whole meaning of Uncle Vanya, he is doing the attempt to kill the enemy in the middle of a play. And there, he comes down and says, don't worry, I will be working for you as it was before. What is that? What kind of pessimism? What kind of understanding of life? What kind of acceptance of life as it is? So, we did the Three Sisters, and it was his late last production of his life. And just one small detail to personalize, you know, the attitude toward Chekhov in contemporary Russia. I was in a rehearsal when he was trying to teach an actress, which was a beautiful word because she died, committed suicide, the last Russian Masha in the Three Sisters. And in a spectacular, you know, way, burned her down, you know, put the kerosene on her and burned herself down, that Masha, then, in a few months after the opening. And he was trying to teach her how to play the last scene. Vershinin is leaving the town, and Masha is staying with Mr. Kuligin, her husband who is nearby, and loves him. I am content, I am content, I am content, but it's a drama. He was trying to teach her, and you know how to teach an actress to play that heartbreaking scene, one of the most, you know, beautiful scene in the world literature. Love scene, actually. Husband is here, and she is, you know, cannot put herself. He was suffering, the director, he was suffering from emphysema. He could not breathe like Jack. Died because of the same, you know, lung problem. And I never witnessed, you know, what does it mean to die from the emphysema. And this is a problem of the lungs when sometimes you cannot take the piece of air. And in such a situation, I saw him many times when he was trying to get the air, he would do like that, and then get the air and slow, you know, gradually get back to that position with an air. And he showed her how to play Masha's scene like that. She played unbelievably beautiful. This is something personal in that when you have the emphysema in yourself and teach the actress how to play the last scene. And the last scene was, yes, the house, I said about the Chekhov's house, beautiful house on stage. You cannot play Three Sisters without the house.
Because the whole issue is that Natasha is taking, you know, room by room, saying that her son, the body needs, you know, that body needs a room, better room, and so on. It's the only play that I know where you hate the child. You hate him. Body needs it. I hate that body. You know, needs the room. And because of the four seasons, nobody really followed Chekhov, like Peter Stein actually did in the Cherokee. Nobody follows that the most important circumstance of the play, all four seasons are there. How to play it? Because the whole issue of the play is, as I said, to live within the time. What he did, Oleg Efremov, in his last production of The Three Sisters, he did eliminate the house from the stage. And the last act was just a part of the trees. And three women there, keeping each other without house. And that feeling of the war without house, it's a feeling of death, of Chekhov, who does not exist. Exist in the nature, exist in the forest, exist in the trees, but not in that house. The same with the Cheryoshek, by the way. We did Cheryoshek a couple of years ago. It was a scandal in Moscow, because any kind of a real interpretation of Chekhov immediately gives you a scandal. Because a lot of people who are trying to protect Chekhov against any kind of new interpretation, actually against new fusion with the contemporary life, they don't like it. Dangerous for the Russians. Chekhov should be in the landscape of the past. Difficult to bring him, you know, in that fight with the contemporary life. So, and in that last show of the Cherry Watcher, the set designer, David Borowski, a genius guy who died a few months ago, one of the creators of Taganka Theater, he proposed the design of the Cherry Watcher, which was shocked, kind of a shock. The action takes place actually on the Moscow Art Theater stage, not, of course, on the Moscow Art Theater stage, it's a production of the Moscow Art, but the design is Moscow Art Theater stage. So they did the second curtain of the Moscow Art Theater, just divided that curtain into two halves and put it like walls of the house. And she came back to the house called Moscow Art Theater. Why? I did ask also my friend David Borowski, why did you make Moscow Art Theater stage as the new house for Raniewska? He said, I was thinking what place she should come now in the contemporary Russia, if she would come back, Raniewska. And I did understand that the only place where she should come is the Moscow Art Theater stage where she was born. There is no place for Raniewska in contemporary Russia. And he did that, the reaction was like, I did tell you about the Donald Rayford book. Let me end with some short remark about that book. The book provoked a scandal because Rayford compressed all of their personal things of the Chekhov's life, which some of the Russian scholars did want even to discuss. And for the first time, he gave kind of an account of Chekhov's personal life and many other things. And we have to integrate it into the Russian understanding of what is Chekhov about, because for many, many years, for a few decades, we were separated from the real Chekhov. By the high school teachers, by the university teachers, by the contemporary theater, separated from real meaning. One of the most important, Ivan Bunin said about the best of the things written ever about Chekhov was the Lev Shestov article after Chekhov's death in a few months. Named A Cruel Talent, Chekhov's, the most delicate Russian writer, The Cruel Talent, about Chekhov's understanding of the world and life as it is. And with that understanding of Chekhov, with his, Leo Tolstoy, who liked Chekhov very much, he once said, he reminds me, he did like as a Chekhov as a person and did not like his plays at all. He did not like Shakespeare also. Tolstoy, he's God. And he once said, they did talk in crime, I met there, oh, Chekhov looks like a beautiful woman. something feminine in him, something tender, something very subtle. And at the same time, incredible courage, and femininity, kind of, you know, and lack of any faith, and doctor psychology. My way of writing is, I am doctor, I have to make a right diagnosis, that's it. What kind of diagnosis he gave to Russia, to the world, in the Three Sisters, in the Cherry Orchard? How did he die? Last year, a couple of years ago, I was in Baden-Baden, where he died. He died in Germany, in the small spa in the southern part of Germany. And they, if I can say, they did celebrate the centennial of his death, if I can say celebrate. And I came for the first time to Baden-Baden to see the place where he died. And for the first time, I was struck by their environment, you know? Because we have, I would say, a general understanding of Czechoslovakia. General understanding, what does it mean to have incurable disease in 1904? Uncurable, it means that hundreds of people coming to Yalta, where he constructed, built his house, in one of his letters, were dying on the streets because nobody could want to host them. Infection, it's deadly, you know, mortal disease. He came to Baden-Baden with all the Knieper, and they had a reservation in the best hotel there, still there, the hotel. And next morning, during the breakfast, the owner of the, he looked at Chekhov, and from the first glance, he didn't understand that he is the consumption, you know, patient. And he said, no way to be in my hotel, you should go. Never discussed. You should go. They went to the Three Stars Hotel, got some room, and he died there in a few weeks. And they put a plaque on the just before, below the room where he died, the Germans. Here in 1904, in July of 1904, great Russian writer Anton Chekhov spent, you know, a month. What does it mean, spend a month? He died. I went to the hotel and asked the manager, why you, what does it mean he spent a month there? He died here. He said, you kidding? This is the beautiful hotel, you know, tourists all over the world are coming, who would say that someone died here, who would come? It's about reality, you know, and understanding of. And Chekhov actually, he died in the way of he was writing. So every writer in the world actually is dying in its own way, because the death is the last moment when you have to create something, if you are able to create something out of your death. He died in Baden-Baden without asking a priest, with another German doctor, with Olga Knieper, and according to her, we know how he died. A minute before he fell asleep, he said, ask Olga, can I have a glass of champagne? I did not drink champagne for a long time. He got it, emptied the glass, and said, in German, not in Russian. The point was that there is a German doctor, and there is Olga Knieper, who is half German, spoke German very well. Ich sterbe, which is, I am dying, and died. From the point of view of Leo Tolstoy or Dostoevsky, it's a wrong death. You should ask priest, you should ask Bible. You have opened the holy book. Both of them are died like that. Tolstoy with the holy book and Dostoevsky with the holy book. This is the first greatest Russian writer who died without, you know, confession. Can I get a glass of champagne? Ich sterbe, it's a diagnosis, that's it. It's a constatation, it's a fact. But for me and for many Russians now, in that way, in a way Chekhov died, it's incredible meaning. It's a kind of a shadow of the 20th century experience, of 21st century experience, how to meet the life, how to deal with real life without any kind of prejudice or preconcept. Easier to die with a holy book, easier of course. Difficult to die with a glass of champagne, but encouraging. Okay, so a few minutes for us.
He had a great sense of humor, as you know, and but very special kind of humor. Very, I would say, there is a Chekhov had all his life, he was trying to take some notes for the, you know, as a, like Trigorin in the city. You know, everything says just probably we need it, just to put it on the stock, in the stock. And when he was a young man, just started his literary life, he bought a collected complete works of Dostoevsky. And he read it over 12 volumes and wrote down in his small book, "It's good." He read Dostoevsky. "It's good, but too long and not modest." Dostoevsky is too long and not modest. You feel it? That kind of humor, you know? That's the greatest Russian. He didn't understand. Yes, of course, he did understand. Too long and, you know, too pretentious. He's not a teacher. He's not a preacher. I'm just a writer. I'm a doctor, actually, not a writer. Sense of humor, but very special sense of humor. Everyone who wants to interpret Cherochet abroad or in Russia, it's just a pure comedy, because this is the misunderstanding of the word, comedy. I did tell you. Dante's also divine comedy. Some comical, farcical elements in the Cherochet everywhere. But as a whole, it's not a farce. It's not a comedy. You have a word for that now. Tragicomedy. Chekhov did not use it, but this is a typical tragicomedy, because it gives, you know, Dostoevsky once said, tragedy and comedy are two sisters. You cannot get real, you know, Shakespeare without understanding of those two sisters. You cannot play Hamlet without, you know, that kind of comic elements in there, without the grave diggers. They give the life, because life is tragicomedy. You know, every time, it's interesting stuff. I don't know, you have that experience or not. I saw Three Sisters, I don't know, 50 times in my life. In the amateur productions, professional productions, in Russia, in Poland, in the States many times. One thing is in common for all kind of quality, for all kind of production in all of the countries where I saw. The very moment when they are coming to the birth party, you know, in the first act, yes? And they are bringing a toy, different, you know, stuff, different gifts. And one of them is the young officer brought a toy. How you call it? The toy, which is a, you know, a toy. But the toy is the whole the meaning of a toy. If you are pumping that, then it, you know, spinning half of a minute, and that collapses. Yes. Why Chekhov choose that kind? You know, hundreds of toys in the world. But he chose that toy. Every time when I saw that moment in a play, in all over the countries, it's a silence. All of the people looked at the toy, as well as the heroes of the play, when it would collapse. It's incredible, you know, any toy, good toy is a metaphor of human life, because we are getting our kids. We are knowing them, we let them know what is life about through the toys. They are playing with the toys, and finally they do understand what's life about. It's one of the very metaphysical stuff is Chekhov emotionally. I don't think that he was thinking it would be symbolic. But it became kind of in each country. We are, someone is pumping up us. And for a half of a minute, we are great, we are alive, we are spinning around, you know. In a minute, spasm, another spasm. Difficult to play with that kind of tragedy and humor at the same time. This is the humor, one of the examples of that kind of Chekhovian humor.
Someone who might be called the new Chekhov would do.
let me say again about the Russian, the scandal in Russia with the Donald Rayfield book, because it's a new Chekhov. New because difficult for us to combine some kind of cruelty and idealistic, great idealistic things in him. Sexuality, never discussed. Never discussed. For the first time, Donald Rayfield put everything there. And Russians are furious about why he did it. Look, this is the relationship between Olga and Chekhov. He married her 3 years before his death. All his life he was alone. Is it an important question for us, if you would like to interpret so-called new Chekhov, why he all his life was alone? Did not want to be married, was joking about that. I would like to have a wife who would be like a moon in the sky, means appear in my, not every night. And he actually got a wife who did not appear every night. She was in Moscow, he was in Yalta. I could not be married man because I cannot stand the happiness whole day long. And so on and so on and so on. For the first time, that guy, Donald Rayfield, did explain all of the sexual stories of Chekhov's life for the first time, for Russians. Some would say, we don't need it. Chekhov is a great writer. We don't need the account of his personal life. But as any great writer, it's important because we are doing all of the great things from ourselves, from our flesh and body and blood. There is the episode, very gloomy, dark, strange episode of Chekhov's life in the last years. He married Olga Knipper. They wanted a child. He dreamed about that. She was pregnant. It's clear from their letters and their correspondence. Then she had a miscarriage. That point was never discussed by Russian scholars. What should be discussed here? She had a miscarriage and she could not give birth to the child, actually for the rest of her life. She overlived Chekhov, she died in the 60s. It's a record. Donald Rayfield, because he's a foreigner, he does not have that kind of Russian understanding of Chekhov, as Chekhov is Russian everything. Like Pushkin, наше все, ours, everything. He looked at the episode of the child who was not born from very plain point of view, from a doctor's point of view, from Chekhov's point of view, he was a doctor. If she is pregnant, and we know all of the letters, and we know when she was in Yalta, when she wasn't, you can calculate. And she did, and he did calculate that she was pregnant, not from Chekhov. It's a scandal. Who knows? And why we should discuss? But if you would just think about that, Chekhov did understand. He's a doctor. What kind of life? Last few years of his life. He married Olga. And actually, Three Sisters. He started writing the Three Sisters because he started the romance, the love story. She visited him in Yalta in the summer of 1900. And as soon as she left, he immediately starts writing the Three Sisters for her. He promised her. And if you look at his letters of that year of the Three Sisters, and then in his journal in Yalta, because he was a kind of a gardener. All his life, he was trying to implement trees and flowers and everything. And every day in the journal, he makes a note. The trees or the flowers, the earth gets it or not, takes it or not. And he was a guess. If the earth gets it, I will be alive. If not, I will die. Every day, because that kind of guessing, I put the flower and I'm waiting. If it will be okay, I will be alive. If not, I am dying. I feel myself like a balloon. Getting there. To be alive, to be on the earth, you have to stick to some things in life. I don't have anything. So, Olga and that last love was the last thing to stick to the life. If you would propose it, just think about that last episode of that child who was not born.
was clear for Chekhov as a doctor that it's not his child. Could you imagine that kind of the stuff which he brought to the Three Sisters and to the Cherepoche? It's not about a personal life, it's about creative life. And hundreds of those things, hundreds of those things. And when you're asking about New Chekhov, what I got from that Donald Rayford book? I knew all of the, and know all of the Chekhovian great scholars in Russia. Personally, know and love them. And one of them who died 2 years ago, Paterny, who is a very famous Chekhovian scholar, he wrote the book, Chekhov and Women. What a trash. I could say now, because he knew all of the things which Donald Rayford collected in the Russian archives. But because of that liberal censorship, he could not allow himself to publish it. Because he was afraid how not to compromise Chekhov. Nothing could compromise a great man. This is my belief. Nothing could compromise him. The more you know, the more you know, the more greatness you have of him. And that's the thing. If you really have the whole picture of his life, you would understand from what kind of lower depths he came. What kind of liberation, the process of liberation he did. How he builded himself. There is a letter of Chekhov to his brother, Alexander, who actually father of Michael Chekhov, a genius actor, the greatest Russian actor of the 20th century, who was a drunkard and alcoholic and so on. And Chekhov in his life, it's a very strange thing, and this is the first time I was discovered. Chekhov had few times in his life, he had a love story with three sisters, step by step, not at the same time. But with three sisters, this is a kind of his specialty. And once he had that love story, the romance, with the three sisters, and one of them was Natasha Golden, who was then finally became wife of his brother, Alexander, and mother of Michael Chekhov. And Chekhov visited them in Petersburg once and witnessed how cruel his brother was, how unintelligent, how it, like an animal in the relationship with that Natasha Golden, who was his mistress years ago. And for the first time, Donald Rayford published a letter of Anton Chekhov to Alexander without ellipses, in a cruel Russian language, in a very cruel Russian language. It shows you greatness of Chekhov. He talks about the relationship with a woman, which is a divine, not just a whole. You understand the image? In the body, but piece of, you know, a God, of universe, you should respect it. Using, you know, cruel Russian language for the first time, he is absolutely great. With keeping, you know, three sisters and all of the delicate things there at the same time, such a passion, such a greatness in him, and hundreds of that things, that's for me new Chekhov, that's combination of very contemporary, you know, what's the life about? Look, Olga Knipper, if you look at the correspondence, we published it, two volumes now, without ellipses, for the first time, because all of the ellipses in all this letter, we did publish. Once, she was kind of, the relationship between Olga and Chekhov is, you know, he's a great writer, but he never talks to me seriously. They're kind of, you know. He treats me like I'm an actress, I'm an idiot. And once she asked, Anton, you are a great writer. Once in your life, talk to me seriously. Tell me about life, what's life about? This is kind of, what's life about? The answer is beautiful. That's for me, new Chekhov. He was amazed. Are you asking about life? What's life about? I cannot tell you. There is no definition. Life is like a carrot. Do you have a definition for carrot? Carrot is a carrot. Life is a life, that's it. Of course, some of the religious people say that's not, you know. He should tell her what's life about if he is a great writer. I don't know, life is a carrot. Carrot is a carrot. I have no definition for it. I was all my life alone as well as I would be alone in my grave. One of his. To get that kind of understanding, it's difficult for the theater.